thanks to phones, you can never really take a break. That's why I delete Twitter off my phone when I actually try to get out of town. That way I'm not sucked into whatever drama's going on. Like, I might have been sucked into the Stanley Cup playoffs last night. Stanley Cup finals between the Colorado Avalanche and the Tampa Bay Lightning. And Giglio, the Avs did the damn thing, man. Like, Florida Panthers, you were the hot team. Florida Panthers, you were the one that was supposed to roll into the playoffs and keep it going. Nope. Got bounced by the Tampa Bay Lightning. Avalanche, on the other hand, they were dominant all season long. They were dominant throughout the playoffs. Nah, but it's this Lightning team that knows how to win. You might have that sheer talent, and the Lightning might have some injury issues, but they know. They've been here before. They've got their own goals to set. They still took care of business and beat the Lightning last night in six games. It's pretty fun to watch all that kind of come out. That's what I love about the Stanley Cup playoffs more than any other postseason. When it's finally done, the finals are over, and the team wins the Stanley Cup, it all pours out onto the ice, and that was cool to see.
It should be encouraging for the Carolina Hurricanes, too. When you think about how the Avalanche are built and how they were able to win, This is not a team that has a super goalie. They don't have an Andrei Vasilevskiy. They are built with an outstanding... Stop me if you've heard this. They have an outstanding defenseman, Cole Maker. They have an outstanding center who was the number one pick in the draft. Okay, forward. Svechnikov was the number two pick. Fine. And they have an outstanding Finn. What does that sound like? Sounds like the Canes.
Yeah, weird, right?
You know? You look at the regular season, too. 56 wins for Colorado, 54 for Carolina, 119 points for Colorado, 116 for the Canes. Goal differential, Colorado 78, Carolina plus 76.
Mm-hmm.
I even heard they talked about the process last night.
Oh, wait. I thought that was...
Joe Sakic.
I thought the process was proprietary. What are you talking about? I thought only certain teams could
do that. And if you think about it, Joe Sakic, who runs the Avalanche, doesn't coach them, but he runs them.
Yeah.
A higher-end type of Rod Brind'Amour, but a great, great accomplished player, particularly in the postseason. You know, you look at... and then you compare that to Rod Brind'Amour. Very, very similar DNA. Nathan MacKinnon was 1-1 overall. That is the thing. But and they're a little bit ahead in the process, too. This is their fifth straight year in the playoffs. But if you're the Carolina Hurricanes, you should watch that last night and go, we can do this. It's possible for us to do this.
But the only way it's going to happen is if the Canes dudes are those dudes. That would be my concern for the Carolina Hurricanes.
And I would say this. I feel like Colorado's forwards they have a deeper set of forwards than the Canes do.
Yes.
I like the Canes' defense better, but you're picking nits at this point. The aggressive style, like I said, the DNA of the franchise is very... It's all very similar. What you're saying, though, is their top guys actually performed when the money was on the table.
As top guys.
And that's the next step for the Canes.
And
right?
But the thing that we have to, and this revisits a conversation we had after the Carolina Hurricanes got beat by the New York Rangers. There's something to be said for being your process and your players being good in the regular season. But do you have that extra gear that can elevate you into a Stanley Cup, a true Stanley Cup contender? There are more of those than not. This is not a knock with the Carolina Hurricanes. I'm simply pointing out it's really difficult to win these things, and special teams are the ones that do it. The Tampa Bay Lightning have been a special team the last 3 years to get to three straight Stanley Cups. And when you heard the players talking about an end of an era, they said, who said we're done? That's their mentality? We'll see what they do with it. You're making that face that might not be visible on the radio, but visible on Sports Plus. It's like, yeah, guys... You know, salary caps and windows and all that stuff are real. Appreciate the optimism, but that might actually be the end of the run for the Lightning.
Well, I kept going to myself last night, you're full of it, Giglio, because they kept saying, oh, the Islanders are the last team to win three in a row. And I'm like, no, the Oilers did it. Gretzky did it.
Yeah.
What's crazy is the Oilers didn't. The Oilers ended up winning five cups, four with Gretzky. They won two. It was interrupted by Patrick Waugh's first Stanley Cup win with Montreal. Then they won two more. So if the Lightning, if there is a template out there for the Lightning, that's it. But did you hear the name of the person I said who was the best player on that team?
Yeah.
Oh, the best player in the history of all of team sports was the best player on that team. And yes, Tom Brady wonks. Wayne Gretzky, without a doubt, it's not even freaking close, is the greatest player in team sports history ever. Period. Stop with your Super Bowl nonsense.
So here's Steven Stamkos on losing a Stanley Cup in year three.
You know, there's probably a lot of teams that get to this position and feel like they had a unbelievable year. And for us, it's disappointing because we know what we have in there. And, we know that feeling that they're having over there right now. It's the best in the world. And, you know, sometimes you forget the other side of it. It was just a grind. I mean, it was... That's what makes it even tougher, because you realize how hard you work to get here. And disappointment is, you probably can't put it into words.
So that was Steven Stamkos on the other side of the Stanley Cup, something that the Lightning have not been familiar with the previous 2 years, having won back-to-back. COG alongside Joe Giglio, I'm Joe Ovi. Speaking of the Stanley Cup, did you see the video last night when they were getting ready for the group photo? And I forgot who it was that had the cup off the top of my head. They come barreling into the group shot, and he trips on the ice, and the Stanley Cup gets dented on the ice.
Already
dented.
Ah.
These are things that the people at the Hockey Hall of Fame account for. They account for this thing to get dented up. How do we know this? Well, we actually talked to one of the keepers of the cup. It's all part of the Hockey Hall of Fame. Phil Pritchard is the one you see the most. He is the guy with the beautiful blonde flow. He has been the keeper of the cup for decades now.
I'm fairly certain they cloned him, though.
Incredibly nice man. Incredibly nice man. And that dude's seen some things.
Yes.
Okay? But we talked to Howie Barrow, who had actually come through in late May when the Canes were in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and the Stanley Cup had made an appearance at the Carolina Ale House, who was their great, great partnership with the Carolina Ale House. Had a good time doing the Canes viewing parties there and everything else. It was a lot of fun. And Barrow, unbeknownst to us, gave us a little history on how many cups actually exist, which cup is real. But we first started the conversation with, all right, what's some of the craziest stuff you've seen being around the cup?
I don't believe so. I don't think I've even asked them. I know enough that whatever happened in the past.
Is there like a
cup? I heard more
cup?
Stories from fans and other players that were there when things happened. So crazy stuff for sure. Being thrown into a swimming pool or something where the cup is not supposed to be because the water is not good for the metal, whether it's salt water or chlorine. Mm. Little things like that. But, I mean, nowadays with smartphones, silly things like that can't happen. Players look after it. They know how hard it is to win it, so they respect it more. And with the touring, too, and the initiation of bringing in a curfew, it's also for us because we have to travel. If we're up all night with the players and then have to take it to the next guy, we're not getting much rest. And, it's probably unsafe to be driving when you're that tired and stuff and do it for a week or more at a time. So I think it helps everybody. I mean, in the end, players probably get it from about early morning, 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock in the morning, and they have it till midnight. That's probably enough time to be able to do what you need to do during the day to celebrate with your family and friends and your community.
That was Howie Barrow, one of the keepers of the cup who works for the Hockey Hall of Fame, on some of the things that he had seen or how things operate now. Giglio, you like to point out that it was actually the Rangers in 94 that ruined cup celebrations for everybody.
Well, they created the myth of the Stanley Cup celebration, and they also did ruin it for them. Like, they're the ones who created, okay, we need a full-time babysitter for the greatest trophy in all of sports. Because there was a lot of time spent at Scores, which, if you're not from the greater tri-state area, is a adult men's establishment.
Yes, it's the ballet.
Yes.
It's the ballet. So Howie Barrow, who was one of the keepers of the cup, had explained to us, you know, some of the crazier things. They've put a newborn baby in the cup.
Yeah, that one was slightly staged, in my opinion. I didn't love that.
Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, because my understanding when we had talked to him was that there was a 90-minute-old baby that had been put in the cup. But then he said, oh, no, we've actually put a baby straight out,
like
the womb.
The placenta
into the cup.
Was still attached.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, into the cup.
Yeah.
Which is, you like to point out to me, this is why you don't drink beer from the Stanley
Cup.
Yeah,
you've done that. And
I have. Think of it, you know what, though? Think of it like you love the chicken from Waffle House, right?
I do.
Why do you love the chicken from Waffle House?
There's a little flavor seared in there. You
The flat surface grill that has been, you know, eggs and waffles and bacon and everything else, right?
Yeah.
I think anybody who's been to a Waffle House understands that flat surface and all the seasoning over the years at that Waffle House is the reason why everything tastes great, especially at 2 o'clock in the morning. Who's to say the beer doesn't hit different with a little placenta? I'm just saying.
That's fair.
I'm just saying. So the conversation with Howie did continue on some of those, you know, Stranger Things?
Well, I'm not sure what the definition of strange is. I mean, the cup itself has been all over the world, 30 different countries. It's been to Afghanistan to support the troops. The boss had taken it to the Great Wall of China just a couple of years ago. I've been in Siberia myself with it over
Siberia?
In Russia.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. That's a quality answer.
Yeah, that's the farthest I've traveled. But everywhere I go for me is special because I never really traveled that much before. I traveled with the cup, and it's all a new experience for me. So it's great to meet people from all over the world, try different foods, and even sample some of the beer. It's pretty fun.
I understand there's more than one cup.
There is. So the one that we travel with, well, no, so you have to let me finish. The one that we travel with is what we consider the original cup. It's the presentation cup. It's the one that travels all around the world. It has all of the history. This is what everybody wants to see, and this is what the players win. We have a second version that is a full-size replica that stays in Toronto at the Hockey Hall of Fame because the one we travel with is on the road about 330 days a year, and the fans deserve to see something when they visit the Hockey Hall of Fame. So the difference between the two, though, is that the one that we have has some errors in some of the inscriptions and everything on it over the years. That's the history of the cup. And the one in Toronto, everything's been corrected. And then according to Wikipedia, there is a third copy, but it's only the bowl itself. And that's the original bowl from 1893, and that's on permanent display in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
That was Howie Barrow, Hockey Hall of Fame. He joined us back in May when they were rolling through with the Stanley Cup. Stanley Cup all over your timeline today. Got dented. Trust me, in our conversation with him or with Phil Pritchard, they account for the damage to the cup. Speaking of damage, emotional damage, the 2022 Hockey Hall of Fame class was just announced at the top of the hour.
Uh-oh.
This has been a thing here locally because Rod Brind'Amour is not in the Hockey Hall of Fame when I think most people understand he should be. I mean, an accomplished career. Roberto Luongo, goalie in the Hockey Hall of Fame, part of this class. Cool. The Sedin twins, Daniel and Henrik, they're in. Okay, cool. As a builder category, they've got Herb Carnegie. All right, fine. I think that's how Pete Karmanos got into the Hockey Hall of Fame, the former owner of the Carolina Hurricanes. A lot of youth hockey associated with that in Detroit. Makes a lot of sense. Daniel Alfredson. Mm. Now I'm starting to wonder what the hell Rod Brind'Amour has to do to get into the Hockey Hall of Fame. He's not part of the 2022 class. Look, no knock on Daniel Alfredson. He's a known name. Played a long time with the Ottawa Senators. Cool. But if you stack up Alfredson's stats and accomplishments with Rod Brind'Amour's, they're not the same. Even right down to a Stanley Cup, for heaven's sake. He doesn't have one. So what am I missing here with Rod Brind'Amour? What does a dude got to do to get in the Hockey Hall of Fame? And I'm not just saying this because we're here locally. We're not saying this because we like Rod. Like, at some point, you got to have to answer why some guys get in and some guys don't. And when I see Daniel Alfredson's name in the Hockey Hall of Fame, even I, one who does not get too worked about Hockey Hall of Fames or any Hall of Fame, goes, all right, so now what? What? Anyway.
If you surveyed 100 general managers over like the cross of history, right, and asked them in the playoffs, who would you rather have, Rod Brind'Amour or both Sedin twins? What do you think the answer would be? Out of 100. I'm being dead serious.
Yeah.
If 10 of those general managers took the Sedin twins over Rod Brind'Amour in the playoffs, 9 of them are lying, and the other one's related to him.
Also, check out A Brief History of Triangle Sports. You can find that wherever you get your podcasts, brought to you by Copiers Plus. Schedule your free print audit today at copiers-plus.com. Last week's episode featuring an intersection of music in Chapel Hill during that up-and-coming scene in the late 80s, early 90s, and Tobacco Road Basketball with Mac McConn. Superchunk, also co-founder of Merge Records. He's a huge sports fan. Big on basketball, big on hockey. Covered a lot of ground in that one. And it's a fun listen. Go check that out. Brief History of Triangle Sports, wherever you get your podcast. Maybe there's going to be a brief history somewhere in Mississippi on how this Ole Miss team managed to win the College World Series. Joining us on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline, D1 Baseball, Aaron Fitt. Aaron, what's going on, man? Aaron,
hey guys, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on? So, if I have this correctly, Ole Miss was number one at one point in the polls. They went 7-14 to start SEC play. At one point, they were in danger of not even making the tournament. Did I read correctly? They actually benched all of their starting pitchers in April as well, and here they are, winners of the College World Series. That's a hell of a turnaround, man.
Yeah, it really is. And this was a preseason top five team that it started off fine, non-conference play, and as soon as they got to SEC play, they were ranked number one in the country. They won their first series, and then the wheels kind of fell off. They got swept when they were number one at Tennessee, and we know Tennessee wound up being the best team in the regular season all year long. And Ole Miss just wandered through the wilderness for the next month and a half, really. And like you said, the whole rotation just got turned over. They were looking for answers, and they found them. I think a big part of this run was discovering this Dylan DeLucia guy, who's now a legend forever in Oxford, Mississippi. Junior college transfer who came in. He's like a middle relief piece early in the season, and he winds up being their ace. And he pitched two just gems in Omaha. He shut out Arkansas on four hits in the bracket final to get him to the finals. And then you got a freshman named Hunter Elliott, left-hander, who just, I guess there's ice in his veins. He's one of those guys that's like a young Ken Emanuel at North Carolina, just shows up on the big stage and can't be fazed. He came up big for him too. But they just gelled. It's really one of those turnarounds that it's kind of like they just reached their destiny, just took a long way to get there. Like Virginia in 2015, like Oregon State in 2007, those were all preseason top 10 teams that just took a while to figure it out. And they all barely snuck into the field of 64 and then went on to win it all.
Aaron Fitt, D1Baseball.com, joining us here on the OG. All right, Fitzy. Last team in the field, one of the first team out was NC State. What should NC State fans make of all of this?
Yeah, that's this one probably adds a little bit to the bitterness that they're already feeling. That could have been us, right? I don't know that it could have been.
Yeah, I mean the pitching is so disparate there, yeah.
Right, it didn't quite come together for NC State on the mound the way it did for Ole Miss. But, it stings a little bit extra for the Wolfpack, especially after what happened last year where they felt like they were this team. They were the Ole Miss team this year, playing the best baseball in Omaha. It felt like we thought they were going to win it all. I mean, I thought they were going to win it all, when all the COVID stuff happened. So it sucks for them. No way to sugarcoat it.
The thing about Ole Miss, though, Fitz, and let's be transparent here, I asked you who was going to win this tournament, and you said the Rebels were going to win this thing. And you know why I actually followed you on that pick of yours? You're going to like this as a Carolina grad. You're going to enjoy this.
Yeah, how about that? I finally got something right.
No. You did get something right, and you did help me out. But listen, last year Mississippi State won the national championship, right?
Yeah.
Okay. If by any chance in our lifetimes NC State ever wins anything else ever again, do you know what's going to happen the very next year?
Hit me.
Carolina is going to win that same exact trophy. And that is what happened with Mississippi State and Ole Miss. Like, Mississippi State, oh, we're going to give you 12 months to eat. And then Ole Miss is like, whoop, slow down there, Bulldogs. We run this show.
Yeah.
Right?
How about that? You got to love it. I mean, especially since in Starkville, they had a terrible year this year. Coming off a national championship, they finished last in the SEC. They're like, 9-21 or something in the league. I mean, it was terrible. Just a disastrous year. But they were all sitting back, feeling good about themselves. At least we got our national title. Everything's good. Ole Miss, Omaha stands for Ole Miss at home again. That's what they've been saying forever down there in Starkville. And now they lost that, too. So that's got to hurt a little bit.
It does. Aaron Fitt, D1 Baseball, joining us here on the OG. And I'm kind of joking about State. I promise I am. But No, I am. But this is what one theory I've had about this tournament. It is the most difficult to win in all of sports. And I understand the physical grind of the Stanley Cup playoffs. But this format is, as you like to say, Joe, pure voodoo.
It is.
And I think, Fitzy, this actually proves Ole Miss, the last team in the field, winning, actually proves like anything can freaking happen in this unbelievably difficult format. Because honestly, can you imagine an NCAA basketball tournament, men's or women's, where the last at-large team in the field wins the whole thing? I don't think we'll live long enough to see something like that.
That's a good point. Yeah, it really is such a game of momentum, and it's about, whose pitching is peaking at the right time and whose arms are fresh and all that stuff. And if you could kind of see it coming for Ole Miss, once they righted the ship and sneaked into the tournament, it kind of felt like that house money team. And you're right, like that doesn't really happen in basketball. I mean, you get those teams that, we've had some improbable Final Four runs, like the George Masons and all that.
Sure.
To take it all the way there and finish it, against the Blue Bloods. I mean, that's the thing, is Ole Miss was a Blue Blood. You know, I mean,
yes.
Again, preseason number four or whatever. Like, it just, you know, it's not like a Cinderella story, but it was pretty unlikely, that's for sure.
Aaron Fitt, D1 Baseball, joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. We'll close on this, and my curiosity is around the SEC. I know Greg Sankey, commissioner of the SEC, has kind of talked about this in a threat form. Hey, you know, with football, we could just go do our own championship. I feel like what we saw with the College World Series and the current SEC teams along with future SEC teams in Texas and Oklahoma, that maybe this is going to be more often than not with college baseball because of the haves and the have-nots and all the money that flows in to the SEC. I feel like they're probably best equipped to make this a thing and other conferences get shut out. Is that a accurate assessment?
Yeah, I think it's clear at this point the SEC is driving the boat in college baseball just like they are in football. I mean, you think about this, guys. In 2010, the start of the 2010 season, there were only two SEC programs that had ever won the national championship in baseball. It was LSU a bunch of times, and then the 90s mostly, and then it was Georgia, like in 1989 or 90. And that was it. And you know, since then, we've had South Carolina win it twice, Vanderbilt win it twice, Florida's won it, Mississippi State, Ole Miss. Like, the power has shifted so dramatically toward the SEC. I don't know how anyone else can just stop their momentum. You know, and they're only going to get stronger when you add Texas and Oklahoma to the mix. And we're headed toward a place where it's just, you know, the power, whatever, four conferences in baseball. They're going to wind up just monopolizing the sport even more than they already do. And they're going to control the direction, you know, with the transformation stuff that's coming, the scholarship restrictions. I think the 11.7, we're going to see the end of that pretty darn soon. And once that happens, we forget it. You know, how do you keep up with those teams? Because they have the resources and they actually use the resources in baseball. They want to spend money on baseball, unlike the Big Ten, you know, which has all kinds of money, but they're never going to invest in baseball because they don't have a chance. It's just, it's a warm weather game that starts in mid-February. But the SEC, they've got the commitment from all of the athletic programs. They got the huge fan bases. They got the best facilities. And of course, that's where most of the top players want to play. They're on TV all the time.
Yeah.
It's just, they got everything going for them.
Aaron Fitt, D1 Baseball. Hey, man, we appreciate it and enjoy the offseason. We'll talk to you later.
All right, guys. Take care.
It's the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. Should we just start going to SEC Media Days instead of ACC Media Days? We're like about a month away or less than a month away from ACC kickoff. At this point, I feel like we should just go visit our new overlords, things SEC. It just means more.
I mean, six of the eight, if you want to count Oklahoma and Texas and Omaha or SEC. And like you said, that's an amazing stat about the number of different teams who've been able to win the national championship just in the last 12 years from the SEC. Incredible.
Really doing my best to avoid all things Kyrie Irving, but I can't. I can't avoid it. We got ESPN on here in the studio. And it's just today in Kyrie Brooklyn news. Now that apparently the Nets are preparing to not have Kyrie and Kevin Durant because of this.
Oh my God.
Which leaves them with Ben Simmons.
Oh.
Right? Just as they planned.
I don't know why that just made me laugh as hard as it did, but
hey, people ride for Ben Simmons, man. He gets his own team now.
Can't make this stuff up.
Who rides for Ben Simmons?
Oh, all the process people with Philadelphia rode for Ben Simmons, man. Like I put the blame squarely on guys like Pablo Torre of ESPN, who kind of like turned the whole Philadelphia truther process into a thing, right?
Okay.
Even though everybody sat there and told him, like, it's kind of hard to build around a guy who won't shoot the ball. Okay, like who actively will not
under
shoot.
The basket, not just three pointers.
Right. Everybody focused on the fact that he didn't hit threes. Or, I'm sorry, didn't even attempt threes. Yeah. No. It's right there, and you're tall. Try. He wouldn't even do that. So yeah, that's Brooklyn. Let this be the lesson. If you think the plan for success revolves around Kyrie, no. I say revolves around. How is it possible? The world is flat for him. Nothing can revolve around anything. So there you go.
There is no access.
There's no access there. Let's answer some Hey Joe questions. Joe cracked the door.
All right. First one up from Hank. Hey Joe, why does Giglio hate the weekend?
Wait, you hate the weekend? What's wrong with the weekend? Okay. I love the weekend. I got so much done this weekend.
I hate this tweet. that comes out every Friday.
Oh, okay.
And it gets, what, 60,000 plus likes each Friday.
It gets like 1.5 million views.
It is the same tweet every Friday. It's Daniel Craig when he was on Saturday Night Live introducing the band or the singer of The Weeknd.
Yeah, the artist The Weeknd.
And it's just, ladies and gentlemen, The Weeknd.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I'm 47 years old, so I'm like genuinely interested. Is this real? Are these bots? Are the Russians trying to tell us they want James Bond to be really popular? I don't understand.
What's hard to understand? It's Friday. You're on Twitter. You see Daniel Craig
announced. Ladies and gentlemen, The Weeknd.
And you're like, oh, you know what? It's The Weeknd. Let's go.
60,000 people every Friday. But then shout out to the people on my timeline who are like, no, I have an alert. No,
hold up.
I have a reminder.
Hold up.
Yes.
Hold up.
Yes.
A reminder?
Yes. And then they
go. An alert for this? And they watch it?
And then they watch it, like it. And I was told I was old. And I, you know what? I accept that and I appreciate that. Because the truth is, today's youths. I'll give you an example.
This is what this is about. I know what this is about. You're upset, and you've been upset about this since you've been over here on the radio side of things and getting a little bit more immersed in social media.
Yes.
It bothers you when you think you tweet out some fire and it gets five likes.
No.
But then somebody will tweet out, like, this player is that dude, and it gets 50,000 likes. Like, Brady Manick. On time, and it gets like a bazillion likes, and you're like, why is that getting so many likes? And I'm sitting here trying to like do some stuff, and it gets nothing.
It's part of it.
Yeah.
But here's Michael Jackson, oddly enough, tweeting to me, you're just old, Joe. On the 15th of each month, I like the same tweet from a SpongeBob account, and I always will. This is the culture. And I said, you know what? Sometimes you need to hear the truth, even if it hurts. So thank you, Michael, because I think it's to your point, if it's the end of the weekend and or the end of the week and you're getting ready, maybe you're at a bar, you're scrolling through. Oh, there's the Daniel Craig.
Let's go.
So maybe the likes are legit. Maybe the bots aren't out to prove James Bond is a superhero.
We're going to find out something real quick because your shameless attempt to go viral began today.
I just want it to get like 2 likes each week. Like, I don't even want people to like it.
You know.
It's so asinine.
Nope.
Both ways.
Nope.
It's asinine.
This is what we're doing. Shout out to Video Joe.
Joe did a great job.
We got you saying, ladies and gentlemen, Monday.
Ladies and gentlemen, Monday.
Woo! Look at you clapping.
Yeah, hey, gotta get hype, right? So we're gonna make this go viral. My goal is 1 million views for this.
Sure.
No,
sure.
We're going to do it every Monday.
You want my Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday?
No, just fine. You can do your Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday on the 999 The Fan account at 999thefan.com.
Yeah.
Every Monday, we're going to tweet that out.
Perfect.
Until it gets 1 million views.
Love it.
Well, you're already at 1,600. So
yes!
Yeah.
Wait, already at 1,600?
1,647.
See? We're tapping in already.
The Utes.
The Utes are on it. Next up.
Wouldn't I need the old people, though, for Mondays?
All right, this one comes from Randall. Hey, Joe, considering Ole Miss and NC State were battling for one of the last spots in the NCAA tournament and Ole Miss won the College World Series, tell me NC State stuff isn't real.
I can't tell you that.
Okay.
I can't tell you that.
This one is interesting. They also pointed out that Mississippi State won last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because NC State wasn't there.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, that's a really tough. I'm telling you, those last 3 years for NC State baseball, 20, they have a great team. Season's canceled. 21, they get kicked out despite having 20 players never test positive for COVID. And then this year, they don't get into the show. And then, you know, the cherry on top of that particular sandwich is their best player transferring now to LSU, to the SEC. So that's a tough one. That Ole Miss, but we just talked to Aaron Fitt. If you missed that conversation, you catch it in the Best of the OG podcast. Ole Miss had some pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who won the game against Arkansas in the elimination game was dealing. That was like a Sam Heifel beats Vanderbilt type moment where you're like, oh, you just stole that game.
Yeah.
From there, dude.
And that's what you have to do in the college. That's what you have to do in college baseball.
That is what it comes down
to. You got
to
steal games.
You get one or two like that and you go, oh. Which is what obviously makes last year so frustrating for NC State was they got that game against Vanderbilt.
Stole
they got that 1-0 game against Vanderbilt.
Yes.
So But this year's NC State team, Highfield, I just mentioned, injured, never really healthy to pitch. They did not have that type of pitching that Ole Miss did. But I will say, it does prove my point that that tournament is so difficult to win. And you looked at the teams in Omaha, the top of the top eight teams. I don't think any of them got to Omaha, of the top eight seeded teams. Can you imagine an NCAA tournament or a college football playoff where a year played out and you're like, oh, Alabama's not there. Ohio State's not there.
None of them are
Clemson's
there.
Not there. You're like, what in the world is going on?
Next up. From Irwin. Will NC State be 4-0 when they head to Clemson on the first Saturday in October?
Why are you worrying about this now, Irwin?
So
Irwin, it's June 27th, man. Chill. You got another 2 months.
He's right, though.
You got another 2 months, right, man. Like, right, relax. Though. Like, why are you working yourself up about this now?
No. Because baseball's finally over. Like, the academic year is finally over.
I know.
And now we're starting to get into ramp-up mode.
Yeah.
And State fans have convinced themselves, this is our year. It's going to be our year. Oh, my gosh. We would have beaten UCLA. We have all these great guys coming back.
Honestly, that's how State fans should view it.
We have a stacked team. But,
yes.
Joe, that's how you feel like 2-3 weeks, in this case, 2-3 months before. When you get closer and closer, that's when the questions start to kick in. You're like, whoa, what happened the last two times we went to ECU? If they had opened up with someone other than ECU this year, I would say to you, there. If we polled 100 State fans, I would say to you, if it was some other opponent other than ECU, they would be like, oh, we're going to win this game. But given what happened the last two times in Greenville, NC State fans have the right, and NC State fans with a memory, and they all have one, know 2016, the second week of the year they go to, in 2016, NC State goes to Greenville, week two. They lose to Scotty Montgomery, who I think won two other games that whole year.
Yeah, it was a brutal loss.
And NC State had 14 or 15 NFL players on that roster.
Yeah.
This wasn't Captain Shane Carden and Zay Jones and the Pirate Heroes beating NC State. This is kind of akin to the team in 2010 where Russell Wilson goes to Greenville and loses there. And you're like, wait, how?
How?
Right. What? Because Russ threw three or four interceptions.
Although never,
that game.
Never forget that happened, because in the story of Russell Wilson, people try to act like they won
games. He was unbelievable.
He was unbelievable the whole time. How could they possibly move on from Russell Wilson, even though he did have moments like that against ECU? Or never forget the Maryland game. So these are all things that matter. I understand that NC State's going through two things right now. One is they're finally getting the attention that Dave Dorn has been demanding for the last 2 years. It's happening this year. And that they do have a window. And that's always been my argument in favor of Dave Dorn, when a lot of NC State fans who essentially wanted to have the old Mike O'Kane, Chuck Amato, Tom O'Brien, one Saturday you're out here smoking a pack of cigarettes because it was so great that Saturday because you knocked off Florida State or Clemson or whatever. But then you also had, you know,
Texas, Baylor.
Right. Like, you had that dynamic where you also had the walk of shame the following week.
Right.
Okay. So, but it's like, yeah, but you know what? It was great that one night.
Donovan McNabb.
Cool. I get that. But my argument in favor of Dave Dorn has always been, a program like NC State, and to a certain extent, a program like North Carolina, should be built on cycles and windows. And these, in my view, Dave Dorn's had one cycle with a window, and they were one wide kick short of really doing it. This is the next opportunity, a true opportunity, where Clemson's not quite out of their down cycle yet, and you've built towards this group with a very good quarterback who has really come into his own. Don't screw it up. The problem is we get a long history of schools around here who screw it up. I'm not just singling out NC State.
I know.
Okay, hey, Carolina last year goes to Virginia Tech knowing what they have to do, and they all over themselves.
So two things to that point. Dave Dorn, I believe it was on the Caravan, pointed out that they're already talking about how Carolina couldn't handle the expectations last year. And NC State doesn't want to follow that template. That's number one. Number two, I had to go back to remember, 2016, ECU beats NC State. Do you know who the other two teams, ECU went 3-9 that year under Scott.
I forgot the other teams that they beat.
The other two teams they beat were Western Carolina, a 1AA team, 52-7 in week one, and UConn, 41-3. UConn, who's won like four 1AA, 1A games in the last 12 years.
A shell of a program.
NC State lost to that ECU team. So
when you talk to ECU, NC State fans and ECU fans, you say, oh, yes, we know it's going to be a very interesting game in the opener. It will be. I don't care what the line is.
What could go wrong? All right, next up.
From EGOT for Life, will we ever see a public verified listing of all NIL deals? Not that us fans necessarily have a right to know, but one gets $11 million, another guy gets $6 million, and a third guy gets a bucket of chicken from a local rotisserie. Who's to know how much is real and not?
We'll never know. That list will never exist. Shout out to Matt Brown, who runs Extra Points, which is a college sports newsletter that focuses on the business side of things. And he actually tried to get this on the lower level, not the Power 5 level, but on the Group of 5 and also smaller schools and their name, image, and likeness deals. And he ran into all sorts of FOIA problems. So the short answer to that, Julio, is no, we're never going to full list of who's making what, which leads to a lot of open speculation and a lot of accusations like we get from Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M.
Well, the latest on this one, though, is between Miami and Florida, Joe.
Yes, yes.
The recruit's name is Jaden Rashada, who's a four-star prospect in the class of 23, so he'll be a senior this year. The number 7 quarterback in the class. According to 247 Sports, he's agreed to a $9.5 million name, image, and likeness deal with Miami mega booster John Ruiz.
Mm-hmm.
But according to On3, Jeremy Crabtree of On3, Rashada actually turned down an $11 million offer from the Florida Gator Collective. What are we doing?
Hey, man.
What is going on out there?
If that's real.
Right. Well, right. I believe the bajazillionaire Ruiz, he's been throwing his money around like it's a giveaway.
Yeah. Next up. Must be nice to have money like that, by the way. Just light it on fire over college athletics.
From Alex, did y'all choose one of the amazing concerts in Raleigh on Saturday between Billy Strings, Backstreet Boys, or James Taylor?
What, no love for that music fest?
Well, that's Durham.
Come on now.
This was specifically Raleigh in the question.
Fair enough. Shout out to that station, our folks down the hall,
who had the
inaugural That Music Festival at the Durham Bulls Athletic Park. Looked like a great scene. Mm-hmm. And I know that the people who went and saw the local artists and some national artists coming through had a good time. So shout out to everybody who participated in that. As far as any of those shows that were mentioned, no, did not go to any of those shows. Although I will admit that I did not know who Billy Strings was. This is not any indictment on Billy Strings' talent. It's more of an indictment on me and when it comes to bluegrass. But we did like 3 or 4 shows at Coca Booth or something like that. They were all sold out. That's wild to me.
I'm just laughing because once upon a time you did a truth bomb. That
I
said,
did.
But Joe, that's not fair to bluegrass.
I know that because my general attitude with bluegrass is it largely all sounds the same to me. But that's unfair to bluegrass. Next up.
Very unfair to bluegrass.
It is.
Oh, no, Joe.
It is.
From Ken, New York Ska Jazz Ensemble coming to Durham. Are you taking Jillio so he can skank to the beat?
Now we're talking. You want to talk about music that all sounds the same? Now that's my jam, ska. I love some ska. Give me some ska. I'm ready. You want to go skank?
Yes.
Yeah, it's really easy
Should
to do.
Should I hit the dump button on
No,
this?
It's called okay. skanking.
Okay.
Dennis, you don't know about that ska?
No.
Getting all up
the
and down.
The Boston's had a one guy who was the designated skanker.
That was exactly what it was. Yeah. He was their designated skanker. There's a band called Skank and Pickle.
Mm-hmm.
Nice ska band. I didn't even realize it was this thing. I'm going to have to look that up. It's in Durham? I will go to that show. I love a good ska band. All right, next up. What's that
you say? This is Robinson. From Ryan. Will there ever be a sport that takes over the dead zone that is July?
No, we need a break, guys. We need a break. It's okay. It is okay. Although somewhere baseball is going, what about us, right? I mean, look, baseball, people are going to be into baseball that are into baseball right now. If you're a Yankees fan, you're loving life right now. If you're a Mets fan, you're loving life. Cool. But yeah, I mean, at some point, people do go on vacation in the summertime. It's the dead of summer. Besides, July is talking season. We do actually have a sporting event. It's called College Football Media Days and letting everybody hype up this upcoming season. That's a sport in and of itself.
So tracking Sahith Tigala at the Travelers Championship doesn't count?
No, okay. It doesn't.
All right. I'd say golf. I say golf.
Which golf? LIV golf or PGA Tour golf?
Well, since we can't bet on LIV or know the scores for LIV, then yeah, it has to be the PGA.
That is a little bit of a problem. If you got any questions for us, any topics you want to hit, just use that hashtag, Hey Joe. We'll find it. We will get to it every day around this time. Again, hashtag Hey Joe. We'll find it and we will talk about it, including whether or not we can get Julio to skank. It's really just wave your arms around. Just go up and down. Do your thing. It's like the easiest dance to do, which is probably why I'm a big fan of ska. If you miss anything from today's show, you can check it out on the Best of the OG podcast, Apple, Spotify, you name it. 5 stars only, positive vibes only.